You're in tune with What It Is on WNCW. I'm Joe Kendrick, joined by Carol Rifkin and Bob Hinkle. Today, we have a conversation about some of the myths of the touring lifestyle of musicians and a lot of the misconceptions about some of the perhaps glamorous and sort of exciting lifestyle of musicians. We're going backstage and on the road today on What It Is.
Well, you can't say that it's all bad. There's some reality to the romance of it. Maybe a good thing to do is give you two just real divergent examples. I was privileged to be on the 1980 Stones Tour of Europe. And in that tour, I was never treated so well in my whole life. And it was, 120 people going from hotel to hotel and country to country, eating and drinking whatever we wanted to, and feeling as though, we were sort of the conquering heroes. Then on the other end of the stick, I can recall being on a Trans-Canada tour of small clubs, going in a van with my rest of my band, not having slept for about a day and a half, getting stuck on the Trans-Canada Highway at 3 o'clock in the morning. And let me tell you, when you're out in the middle of the nowhere, there is nowhere that's nowhere like the Trans-Canada Highway at 3 o'clock in the morning in the middle of Manitoba. And we were stuck because there was a moose laying in the middle of the road, and he would not move. And he would not move for 2 hours. We'd blow the horn. We could, do the lights. I think at one point we even got our guitars and started to see if we could move him by playing badly. But he wouldn't move. He moved about 5 o'clock in the morning. And, of course, we were 2 hours late getting to the next place we were supposed to play. And we didn't get paid because we were 2 hours late. And so we didn't have any money for this and any money for that. And, it goes in that way until it accumulates to the point where you get a little, am I doing the right thing here? Is this what I'm supposed to be doing? So it's largely, for most people, if you take the average, it's more towards the moose in the middle of the road side of things than it is the Stones in Europe.
Absolutely. I never did the Stones in Europe. I did all the van going across Canada or the bus. I have wonderful memories of pushing our old bus across the parking lot at Niagara Falls or breaking down in the Midwest where there always seemed to be a good side to the story, though. I mean, remember breaking down in the middle of nowhere in Wyoming or something like that, and people just took us in. Some guy with a garage fixed the bus, and we pushed it out of there, whatever, or driving across Canada. But I'd have to say there is no better moment in life than standing backstage at a big festival getting ready to go on. I mean, it's so much fun. Being a touring artist gives you the greatest joy and the worst lows, sitting by the side of the road, right, Wondering what you're going to do when the bus breaks down.
It enables you, because it's largely what you really, really, really want to do, enables you to maintain the picture in your head of that moment standing backstage at the festival waiting to go on whenever, the bus is broken down and you're having to push it across the parking lot.
You remember those great things, though. I got to do so many wonderful things, to go to all the major, most of the major folk festivals in the country, and to go to play at Lincoln Center and to play at the Kennedy Center and lots of things like that. I was speaking recently with my pal Woody Platt from the Steep Canyon Rangers, who was talking about, who ever thought he'd get to play at Carnegie Hall? He just played Carnegie Hall with Steve Martin, and he said, even more so than playing Carnegie Hall was looking out and seeing Paul Simon in the front row a few seats down from my girlfriend and parents. You just get the ultimate high. And in the long run, it's whether or not you have the personality type and the wherewithal to keep it together. I was talking with Bob earlier. A lot of people who become successful in music didn't come from a background where they had strong personal traits to keep them going. One of the reasons they were able to succeed, maybe you don't have to have a master's degree to become a rock and roll star. You can come from poverty, but you might not have the kind of family structure and support that would give you better tools in the long run to deal with it. I think Elvis perhaps being a great example.
Yeah, even the kids who do this from middle-class families who have had enough to feel as though they're ready to take on the world in this way, a lot of them find themselves with empty heads and empty pockets, and find themselves addicted to one thing or the other. And It basically destroys people. It can really destroy people, and I've seen it a lot of times.
Well, there's a parallel to the storylines that life on the road gives you to, say, being a mariner, you know, being
right.
on a ship and sailing around the world. In that time in between ports, you're left alone with a small group of people that are traveling with you, and those sort of tight-knit dramas that play themselves out on the road make for really good reading.
And
they made for good
and,
stories
and
all
the microphone talking about it, you know, as well.
Yeah.
Here's a good one. 1966, was in a band, we were on tour opening for Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels. Everybody was on one bus. In a miracle of modern booking and routing, we started the tour in New York, and our first date was in Oklahoma City. It was February. We went through two separate and distinct blizzards between New York and Oklahoma City, the worst of which was on the West Virginia Turnpike, which is, if you know that, it's still only two lanes. And I was very fortunate in my entire career not to get involved in drugs at all of any kind, except for that one night where somewhere about the 19th hour of trying to get off the West Virginia Turnpike, what was going on in the back of the bus suddenly became very appealing to me. So I found myself, you know, back in the back of the bus. I didn't even know what anybody was doing, and I still don't. But whatever it was, we did some of it. And shortly thereafter, I went to my seat, and I swear to God I could count the number of snowflakes that were falling in the West Virginia night. We stopped at a rest stop, one of those wonderful West Virginia rest stops, went in there, and apparently I got fixated on the lights on the Coke machine because I stood in front of the Coke machine, and I don't remember this, but apparently I stood there for about 20 minutes just looking at the lights on the Coke machine until a truck driver came in and stood behind me who wanted a Coke, and I wouldn't move. My life got saved by Mitch's bodyguard. He was an extremely large fellow, very friendly, gentle guy, who sort of led me by the hand back over to the table. But I probably almost lost my life because of whatever that stuff was.
You're channeling that moose.
Yeah. I'm still waiting for the bodyguard. I think what happens, Joe, is that people make the choice to get off the ship. No, they say, I'm not cut out for being on the ship, being the mariner, or being on the bus or whatever, and I'd be better off being that doctor, or this was fun for a while and I wanted to be it. It's the defining moment when you say, I think I'll do this part-time. I think I'll be a journalist and write about music
right.
for a while.
Well, that's one of the reasons I became a music manager rather than a musician.
Mm-hmm. I think it's always interesting to look at that disconnect of some of the misconceptions of what it really amounts to be on the road all the time and to have an artist show up and play for 90 minutes and have that to be the sole focus of all of their energies. It can be really draining, and it can be really kind of a bad equation where you get people that come to the show that are excited and they're just really pumped up and they want to interact with the artist and say right after the show, backstage is not really a great time to talk to a lot of artists anyway, because they've really just left it all on the field, so to speak, and they kind of need some me time.
Right. Good friend of mine, gospel singer, used to say he left his tonsils on the microphone.
I don't know. For me, I think people say, well, you know, he turned his back to everyone and walked away and was off by himself for a while. But as a musician, I do that immediately, not to ignore the people, but because my instruments are just so important to me that I immediately take my guitar, my stuff, my millions of little things I carry around. And
you mean
and
you don't have a bodyguard
away.
Just for your guitar?
But I go and pack up. And I think that's true of most musicians. It doesn't matter how famous you are. You want to take your things you just used and they're important to you. And it's like a putting away of the show before you move on to the people. And I don't think people realize that.
Another people do, as you were saying, something if you change over and you're going to do the non-music thing, but you're going to keep music in your life sort of thing. A lot of people do that. I mean, well, I'm living proof to that. I'm, you know, I co-run a White Horse Black Mountain in Black Mountain, North Carolina. It's a music venue, and no one can kick me off the stage. You know, if I go up there and decide to sing, by golly, there I am. My place, and I'll do what I want.
Yeah. Well, I know being on the road opens up all kinds of other opportunities. I went on the road pretty empty-headed with no thoughts of what I really wanted to do except, well, man, this is fun. You know, I'll go jogging in between my things on the road. But I would look around and see all the things related to music. When I'd go to a festival and everybody was looking for the party, I'd be going, wow, how'd they get all these people here? How'd they organize that? That's so cool. Look at the way they've got those lists and they have those walkie-talkies and they have. And I was fascinated with it. And the writing, you know, there'd be all these people there. And that was how I came to journalism, actually, was meeting Scott Nygaard, who was a famous guitar player at the time, playing with Alison Krauss and a lot of other people. And he became the editor of Acoustic Guitar Magazine. And we would talk about writing. And when he got to that point, and that, I mean, it started a journalism career for me accidentally, because people would say, well, you can write. Can you write something for me about that experience? And the next thing I knew, I was a magazine writer and then a newspaper journalist.
There you
go. So it opens up other worlds as well.
Well, currently, there is a lot more connectivity when you're out on the road. A lot of times, people come to WNCW, and one of the first questions is, do you have Wi-Fi? And they get online as quickly as possible and catch up. Now, in days gone by, that wasn't the case, but there is still that basic truth that being on the road is a little bit like being in a parallel universe.
Right. True.
And it's not reality in a lot of ways, and it leads to really changing people significantly over time. You can go, and a lot of bands, really, really hardworking, successful touring bands, might not come back for a number of years.
That's right. That's right. Or they stay around for a number of years, and then you think they're about to be the biggest thing since sliced bread, and they explode all of a sudden, and they're gone.
I found that people's relationships become distorted. I used to call it the shortening of relationships, and part of it is that we'd go to a festival, you meet a person you've never seen in your life, you stay in their house for 3 days, they drive you around, and it puts a barrier down that you would normally have to a stranger, where they become your best friend. I mean, I would get to know people better in 4 days than people I grew up with. I would know everything.
That's very true.
And some of those people are still really good friends. I made some wonderful friends from that era. But at the same time, you start to feel, I think, and it's a problem for many performers, that life, everything becomes too short and complex, and the people at home seem too far away.
You know, having said all of this, though, there's a feeling that people have. And I'm not talking about the artists who travel now and are on the road, but the people that they play for. There's a communication. People come and they sit and they listen to artists because they want to know something that they're not. And artists can generally supply them with that if they've picked an artist that's sort of consonant with their own thoughts. And so for all of the difficulties and foibles that there are about being on the road, God bless those people who are on the road. And, you know, I wish them well. I wish them Godspeed, all of them. And I certainly hope that everybody in every audience, maybe, or if they're hearing this, has a little better idea what it's really like. But I hope it goes on forever.
Be nice to those folks you go to see play.
That's right. Live music is the best way to experience music. What do you think? Email us what it is at wncw.org. For Public Radio, I'm Joe Kendrick, joined by Carol Rifkin and Bob Hinkle. Until next time.